born in 1592 in the Highlands of Scotland, and he is still alive. He is immortal, constantly facing other immortals in combat to the death. The winner takes his enemy's head, and with it, his power. We know the truth about immortals. In the end, there can be only one. May it be Duncan MacLeod, the Highlander.
Here we are, born to be kings. We're the princes of the universe.
And welcome to Let's Watch Highlander. This is Let's Watch Highlander, Season 6, Episode 13, Not to Be. And here to talk with you, as we are always, I am Travis, a.k.a. TV's Travis. And over there, that's the Audie Norman. Audie, how are you?
Doing all right, man. Doing okay. Recovering from all kinds of weirdness with the family.
It's always weirdness with the family, but everybody's doing well, and that's what's important.
Yep. Absolutely.
So here we are at... last episode was the penultimate one. Here it is, the ultimate episode, the series finale of Highlander.
Yeah.
Not to be. It's episode number 119 aired of this series, which is crazy to think about that we have done reviews on now all 119 episodes, or will have done by the end of this.
Right.
It's been quite the journey. We're definitely going to talk about that a little bit more. And this show in particular is not done yet.
Mm-hmm.
But this will be the last Highlander episode that we have for Highlander the series.
Yeah.
And it goes out with I think a pretty good bang. I think there's some decent stuff going on in here.
Interesting stuff, I would say, more than anything.
It definitely gives more there's more like, oh, I want more of that. That I think could have been done, but you know, probably budgetary reasons and whatnot. They didn't get around to it, but we'll get into that.
Sure.
Much like last week, no Watcher Chronicle for this.
Imagine that.
Yeah, I know. So it's really weird, but we do have an episode to talk about. So I think we just dive right into it.
Sure.
Methos became bitter, filled with hate, and Cronus gave him a vent for that hatred. The horsemen rode again, and they made the Russian mafia look like the Vienna Boys Choir.
So we started off with a real quick recap of the previous episode with voiceover from Jim Burns, Joe Dawson.
Mm-hmm.
And then Duncan sees Tessa, and that's where we cliffhangered last time. And we sort of pick up right there where he's seeing her walking up a staircase. He's kind of standing up above. She's on like an outdoor staircase. And he's like, he can't believe that she's alive. And Fitz tells her, well, in this universe, you never existed, so she never met you, so she was never gunned down. And then Duncan finds out that she has children, because she goes to see them. And he immediately wants to go talk to her. And Fitz is like, dude, you can't, you know, you don't exist here. She doesn't know who you are. But Duncan being Duncan, he kind of does what he's going to do anyway. So he goes to her art gallery that she is running, and he walks in and she's on the phone. He's looking around at art and whatnot. She comes over to talk to him, and he's immediately, of course, all moon eyed. Can't believe he's standing here talking to Tessa, which, you know, I get. She has no idea who he is. He starts talking about her sculptures, which she's like, no, none of these are mine. I stopped sculpting years ago. And Duncan can't believe that.
Yeah.
Because she had such a passion for it, and she makes the inference that he is an old friend from her college days at her art school.
Because that's the only way anybody would know she did art.
Exactly. So Duncan runs with that. He kind of is talking to her, but he can't believe that she's not sculpting anymore and not doing art and just selling it. And then she ends up getting pulled away by another patron, I believe. So Duncan leaves, and now he's at a bar with Fritz. They're chatting. There's a great moment where, Fitz orders a scotch or a whiskey, and, Duncan's like, I didn't know dead people had to eat or drink. And he's like, a world without Guinness? I mean, that would be hell.
Yeah.
And they're talking when suddenly Fitz is just gone. He's disappeared. Duncan's sitting alone, and Tessa walks in.
Mm-hmm.
And she sees him and comes over to sit down with him. And there's that recognition that you get when you think you're supposed to know someone that Tessa is giving to Duncan. Like,
right.
She doesn't know who he is, but she thinks she's supposed to know who he is. And there's something intriguing about him. So she sits down, and they no more than say hello, and her husband walks in.
Mm-hmm.
And there's not, it doesn't get standoffish at really much at all. But the husband, Anders, he ends up inviting Duncan over for dinner that night, to which Tessa's sort of not really on board with at first. She's kind of like, I don't know, but you can tell she wants Duncan to come over, but also right. doesn't. And but Anders is like, no, it'll be fine. You guys are old friends. It's fine. Come over. The kids will be at their grandparents. Come on over and have dinner. It'll be nice to have an adult conversation. I liked that because that was a relatable line.
Yeah, it was.
Anybody who has been a parent at any point has felt that exact thing.
Yes.
And then after they leave, Fitz suddenly appears again and tells Duncan, look, you're playing with fire, dude. This isn't going to go well. But then later that night, Duncan goes to the house. He shows up. He's nervous, knocks on the door. Tessa answers. And there was a brief moment where Tessa's getting ready, and it's not really a quarrel necessarily with her and Anders, but it's more of like she feels like something in her life is missing,
mm-hmm.
and that's kind of the impression that we're getting. So, right. So she answers the door. She lets Duncan in. He gets there. They sit down. They're about to have a glass of wine when the phone rings and Anders gets a call from his office and he has to leave immediately.
Mm-hmm.
He's got to go take care of something right now. And Tessa at first is like, don't leave. Like, she doesn't want to be there alone with Duncan.
Right.
And Anders is like, it's fine. You guys do your thing. Duncan immediately is like, I should leave. I shouldn't be here. I'm going to go.
Mm-hmm.
He goes to leave. She tries to stop him. They talk for a minute and then she... you know, mentioning her art, says, do you want to see some of my old sculptures? I kept a few of them, and takes him to another spot. By the way, this was at the house, right? That house that they use for everything in this series.
Mm-hmm.
They go to the, like, another part of it or another building, and it's got a bunch of her sculptures, and Duncan pulls the sheet off of one, and he recognizes it, and he knows the backstory of it, which she has never told anyone. This version of Tessa, because she never knew Duncan, she never told about this. And it was a statue having to do with basically lovers that were destined to always be apart.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a real intense moment between the two of them. Actually, some pretty good acting from both Adrian Paul and Alexander Vandernew, I thought there.
Yeah, they really fall back into it.
Yeah, their chemistry is great. And they end up rolling in the hay. They have a passionate... torrid affair. Duncan wakes up afterwards and Tessa's standing in the other room, and now she's regretful of everything because she has a husband, she has a family.
Mm-hmm.
But she was missing something. She was missing some passion that Duncan awoke in her, but now she wants him to leave. And so Duncan does, and now he's at a bar again with Fitz, kind of lamenting what happened. And Fitz is like, look, you can't change things here. This is the life that these people are leading without a Duncan MacLeod. And Tessa is destined to have this life of missing something that she feels like she is missing. And nothing you do will change that.
Right.
And, you know, Duncan's kind of down on that a little bit. And then Fitz goes, hold on. And he goes over and he starts hitting on the barmaid. And while that's going on, you hear a voice start to berate her for more beer. And Duncan recognizes the voice, and it's Mythos.
Yep.
And Mythos, in this world, where there's no Duncan MacLeod, is a real dick.
Yep.
And he even goes so far as to turn around. Duncan's staring at him, and he turns around. He's like, what? Do you know me? You think you know me? You don't. He's like, just in his face and tells him to watch, you know, keep his eyes to himself, mm-hmm. leaves. So now Duncan is like, all right, we got to figure out what's going on here. And we get Fitz gives him some backstory about what happened. Because, you know, the tale of Mythos is a sad one.
Well, just before that, too, we get the tale of Fitz in this world, too, which I thought was very clever.
That was great because they gave it to us from Fitz's mouth, where he's like, look, in this world, I died 280 years ago in a moment that we saw where he was trying to blow up Parliament.
Right.
And there was
you weren't there to stop me.
Yeah, there was no big Scottish guy there to stop him. And so he ended up getting caught and taken to the executioners and getting beheaded. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, he's like, look, that's what happened here. I've been dead for almost 300 years now. And he starts to tell him the story of Mythos. And Mythos, they go back to 1995, where right around the time that Duncan would have met Mythos, had he been alive in this timeline, Mythos has fallen in love with a Watcher. Her name is Jillian. He is Adam Pearson of the Watchers.
Right.
He loves her, and so he reveals his secret, that he is an immortal. Now, this is the Watchers that are run by Joe Dawson and Jim Horton. Horton is not dead. So the Watchers, a lot of them are still very antagonistic towards the Immortals. Mythos doesn't want any part of that. But Jillian wants to try and smooth things over and make things better. And she thinks that having a Watcher that is a friend to a lot of the Watchers come out and expose himself as an Immortal will help. And Mythos is like, hey, that ain't gonna change nothing. Because in order for that to change, they have to admit they're wrong. They're not going to admit they're wrong, all this kind of stuff. So he's madly in love with her. He gets a ring. He's going to propose to her when she shows up with Horton, because she decided to take it upon herself to tell him anyway, thinking it would. And Horton being Horton is like, sure, yeah, let's go. And then gets there and immediately is like, no, and shoots her in front of Mythos, then shoots Mythos. And is about to, him and his men are shooting, you know, wildly, and they're about to take out Mythos, when who shows up but Kronos.
Yep.
And Kronos sweeps in, shoots down a bunch of the Watchers. Horton runs off because, you know, that's what happens here. But Kronos effectively rescues Mythos, who is now angry and embittered at the loss of, you know, this woman that he loved so much at the hands of the Watchers.
Yep.
And as Fitz puts it, Mythos was upset and he was filled with rage, and Kronos gave him a vent for that rage, and they reformed the Horsemen. And there was no Duncan MacLeod to stop him.
Yep.
And so they reform the Horsemen and do their thing. And then Fitz lets slip yet another moment where he says, in the tale, and what happened to Richie is even worse. And Duncan's like, wait, Richie? And now we get the story of Richie Ryan, which is even sadder, because in this world, where again, no Duncan MacLeod, Richie never meets him trying to break into the antique store. So he just continues to be kind of a petty thief.
Right.
And doing his thievery stuff until he has his first death while he's like robbing some house and gets shot. Mm-hmm. And he wakes up with no teacher and no idea what's going on. And he is very confused. And so he just goes on the run. And he's running from anyone and everything. And then Immortals start chasing him, too. So now he's got the cops on his tail, presumably Watchers following him everywhere. And now Immortals are popping up left and right. And one finally does take him under his wing. But it's Mythos.
Yep.
And they bring him, he and Kronos bring him into the Horsemen, teaching him more on how to steal and all this kind of stuff. But they have one more test for him. And they want him to kill Joe Dawson.
Yep.
Because Dawson... Yeah, Dawson runs the Watchers. And the Watchers killed Silas and Caspian.
Yep.
Which was a great way to have the Horsemen without having to bring back those two.
Yeah.
Just be like, yeah, no, they were here, but then they got killed.
In a wild way to slyly say, oh, yeah, this is... Dawson killed him. It's like, dang it.
Yeah, so they send Richie to do that. And Richie goes to Joe's place. Joe shows up and Richie's got a gun. And he's just, I mean, he's shaking. He's so nervous with it. He's never killed anyone before. Because this Richie, while very, you know, street tough thief, the young, basically a couple years older version of the young kid we met at the beginning of the series, that kid was never a killer.
Right.
But Mythos is trying to turn him into one. And Joe kind of has an idea that you know, Richie's not a bad kid, but he can't really stop him. Like, the Watchers have been, you know, keeping tabs on him as best they could. Well, we cut to Richie standing there waiting when Mythos and Kronos show up, and they're like, hey, we were waiting to hear from you. What happened? And he's like, look, I couldn't do it. He confesses that he couldn't kill Dawson. So they say, oh, that's all right, you know, let's go for a drink. And they take him to a secluded spot where Mythos takes Richie's head.
Yep.
Even though Richie is scared and basically begging him not to, and he thought they were friends, all that kind of stuff. And of course, Fitz makes Duncan watch all of this.
Yep.
So now Duncan is upset, to say the least. And he wants Mythos. And Fitz keeps telling him, like, you silly Scott, when are you going to figure out? You don't exist here. You can't do anything here. Like, you can just observe this. That's it. But he doesn't want anything to do with it. So then we fast forward a couple of years to Mythos and Kronos finding Joe. And
Joe with the bad wig.
Yep. This is back Joe with the bad wig and what we saw last week, where he's given up on the Watchers. He's given up on everything. And they find him. They're, you know, not quite torturing him, but they're trying to get information, trying to find Horton, basically, is what they want. And Joe won't give up any of the info. They take him to some secluded spot that supposedly he was at, blah, blah, blah. Basically an excuse to get him somewhere where there's no people. But Duncan shows up, and he takes out Kronos, knocks him out, gets his sword, and then he fights with Mythos. And what I liked about this fight, we'll talk about a little bit more, was him using what he knows of Mythos against him. That was kind of cool.
Yes.
But he
very much so.
He defeats Mythos. He goes to take his head when suddenly everything disappears again, and it's Fitz.
Yep.
And Fitz is basically tells him, like, do you see? Do you see all of the stuff that has happened because there was no Duncan MacLeod? And all of the lives that you could have affected and made, and all of the lives that you made better because of your existence? And it's at this point that Duncan realizes it and kind of comes around. And he's like, okay, I you know, sure, I get it. I need to live. I can't just be giving up my life. And Fitz is like, good. Now, you're going to go back, and I don't want to see you for a good long time. And it's a really great moment between Fitz and Duncan.
Oh, my gosh. Like, at that moment, I was like, okay, can we just get a series of these two actors doing anything together?
Yeah. There's just, it's such great chemistry between them, and it's just this really heartfelt moment. So he sends him back. And Duncan wakes up with Mythos kind of slapping him like, hey, wake up. You know, and he's back laying on that train engine cart thing. And he's only been out for a couple of minutes. But Mythos is like, we got to get moving. O'Rourke's men are going to be here any minute. And he no more than says that, and he gets shot in the back by one of O'Rourke's men.
Yep.
So they get out of that situation because apparently the guy doesn't know about immortals. I don't know. But they knock him out. Mythos hides, and, you know, after he comes back and grabs him. And then Duncan's like, I have an idea. And I do like this moment where he switches it up and he has Mythos put on the jacket and hat and march him back at gunpoint. And I like Mythos being like, you know, the bad guy that wears the same size as you trick never works. And Duncan's like, it just needs to work for 30 seconds. That's all.
Right.
But they walk it back, and Duncan now, instead of giving up like he was going to, confronts O'Rourke. And is like, no, we're going to have this out. Civilized immortals, we're going to fight this out. And so Mythos gets Amanda and Joe, unties them, gets them to, they all get to kind of a safe distance to watch. And Duncan has his fight with O'Rourke. And he comes out victorious.
Yep.
Two McKellen malt whiskies made from Scotland's finest waters, please.
Somehow I never expected the dead to need anything to eat or drink, Fitz. Even you.
What? No more Guinness? My God, that would be hell.
So our special guest this week, I mean, we had a couple, kind of like last week, but the first one I want to mention, Alexander Vandernoot as Tessa.
Mm-hmm.
It was really great to see her back and just slipping right back into the role and playing, because she's playing Tessa, but she's playing a slightly different version of Tessa.
Yes.
The complaint I would have, and this will be a running theme for this episode, and I want to preface this by saying this is a very good episode, but I wanted more of this. I wanted to dive more into this particular thing, because the whole, like, Tessa and Duncan were such a pivotal part of the early part of this series, and even after Tessa's death, her character loomed over the show for another season and a half before Duncan really kind of was able to sort of to truly move on from it. Like, you know, he's had to do however many times in 400 years, but she was such a pivotal and important thing. And it was a cool idea to be like, oh, well, what would her life have been like if she had never met Duncan MacLeod? And to have it be where, no, she was still involved in art, but she had lost the passion for it because she didn't have Duncan there telling her how wonderful it was, the art that she was doing, and sharing that passion with her. You know, her husband was fine. There was nothing wrong with the character of Anders. He wasn't a bad guy at all. And he funded a lot of what she did, although kind of with sort of backhanded compliments a lot and sort of a, well, this doesn't make any money type of thing.
I was going to say, they set him up to be the realist to, quote unquote, crush her dream.
Yeah, a little bit kind of that. Thing. Yeah. But it would have been pretty interesting to stretch out the scenario that they built up and they did over more time.
Sure. Oh yeah.
Because again, it's a very interesting thing, because Duncan sees Tessa, but Duncan sees his Tessa, and it's not, this isn't the same Tessa, but she could be type of thing.
Right.
And it just could have been done over a longer period of time, but it's still what they did, I thought, was really good and really effective.
Mm-hmm. I also liked the way they handled them spending the night together, and then afterwards, her feeling that guilt of it. Husband doesn't catch them. There's not this huge drama. It's just simple, like, I have a family, and I can't just turn my back on that. Whatever this is it.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, because it is definitely the thing that she feels like she's missing in her life, but she's not giving up what she has for that thing. And Duncan kind of knows that too. But it's like, he needs to see this in order to sort of walk the journey that he needs to walk.
Right.
But it was very good to see her back. And I thought it was really well done overall.
Yeah.
We also had Stan Kirsch come back as Richie Ryan.
Yeah, we did.
And again, it's kind of the same exact thing. He slides right back into the role. He's playing a different version of Richie than we had seen, but it's still Richie. And it would have been really intriguing to see more of it.
Yeah.
And to see it play out over more time. But I think a good part of that, just like with Tessa, is us as audience who have been watching this show from the beginning, Richie is such an important thing. And the loss of him at the end of last season is still fresh for us. And so, you know, if there's a chance for more Richie, we want more Richie.
Yeah, I think the only thing that I was missing is by the time he gets to Joe and is supposed to kill him, I wish I had more of an understanding of why he can't do it. Like, they played it very shorthand. I wish we would have had more, I don't know, something showing us that Mythos never trained him to kill anybody. He kept him along for whatever reason, but never actually let him have a kill.
Yeah, we don't get a sense of how long he's with Mythos prior to them sending him after Joe. And again, it's the same thing with Tessa. It's very truncated.
Right.
And I just would have liked for it to have been more of its own story. Like, you could have dedicated an entire episode of, you know, entire episode's length to the Tessa subplot and then to the Richie subplot. Mm-hmm. It wouldn't have felt stretched at all to go through all that.
At the same time, I appreciate also the way they ended Richie, in that Mythos is just like, oh, you can't do it. Okay. Smack.
Yeah.
Takes his head to show us how far gone Mythos is.
It shows us how far gone Mythos is, and it gives the sad tale of Richie, because it's even in this universe, in this world where Duncan doesn't exist, he is even more of untapped potential.
Enough that Joe knows him easily.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Joe knows who he is. He sees something in him, much like Duncan did, much like Joe did in our world, and even Mythos. But he's even more untapped because he never had anybody to unlock any of those good things in him.
Right.
So again, it's just a case of like running time and not having enough to really expand it. But what they did, I thought they did well. And it was, again, just great to see Stan Kirsch there. And I'm sure from a production standpoint, that was really fun to have him back on set.
Oh, yeah.
Valentin Pelka shows up as Kronos. Perfect to have him in there as a little foil. And a great way to show what could have happened with Mythos, because that was the darkest potential timeline, was Mythos rejoining the Four Horsemen. And basically using that as like, Mythos had changed over the years, but he needed that last little push from Duncan to not fall back into what he was.
Right.
And so plus Valentin Pelka, you know, he's just great in that role.
He really is. And again, slides right into it.
And it's a good, easy shorthand for us as fans of the series. Mm-hmm. We don't have to stretch too far to be like, I could see this happening.
Yep.
We also had, briefly, what's his name? Played O'Rourke.
Martin McDougal.
Yeah, Martin McDougal back real briefly. Peter Hudson for like a hot second.
Hot second, yeah.
As Horton. And, you know, they're both good. I do in some ways wish that O'Rourke had been a character we had seen before, but there weren't really any to use.
Yeah.
So, you know, to have him do what he does is fine. Like, he's there more as a plot device than anything else, but a lot of villains are. But it works. And it gives us a good reason for a fight. It wraps up kind of what had been started in the last episode, where Duncan is feeling as though he brings more harm than good, including what happened with O'Rourke and the guilt that he feels over something like that. And now he can bring that full circle and be like, no, never mind. I'm not giving up. We're, you know, if you beat me, you beat me, but I'm not giving up. And he knows O'Rourke won't stop. And then, of course, it's not special guests without talking about our man, Roger Daltrey.
Yep.
It's Fitz. Fitz is just... Fitz was the perfect character to have leading Duncan through all of this.
Absolutely.
Because those two just had great chemistry on screen. They had great moments. And he brings the perfect amount of levity to lighten a mood. Like, when he shows up out of at the end, inside, just as he's about to take Mythos' head in that universe, and then suddenly it's Fitz there, and he's like, you know, I've missed the last 300 years, and that is a lot of very unsatisfied women. And Duncan just being like, oh, I missed you, Fitz.
Yeah.
Like, it's perfect. And Roger Daltrey I'm so glad that they were able to set some of these episodes in full flashback and bring Roger Daltrey back for them after killing off his character, because he's just so much fun.
He really is. And you could tell he's having fun with that character.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So, top work from all the special guests. And bringing back characters that we had been missing for a season, three seasons, all this kind of stuff. Everybody just slipped right back into the chemistry that they had while playing slight variations on the characters that they were. So
yeah,
it was pretty amazing, and I really enjoyed that.
Yep.
And me? Well, I missed out on almost three centuries of living. Now that's an awful lot of unhappy women.
Oh, Fitz, I missed you.
So we don't really have, like, we do have a flashback, but we kind of don't have a flashback, right? Because...
Yeah, not really.
Like, last episode had a legit flashback moment. And this one has, like, oh, we're going to rewind 2 years, but it's already inside of this sort of dream sequence.
Right.
Alternate reality anyway, so... Because basically the first two-thirds of this episode are that. So we talked about what happened in 1995, which did throw me off at first when he started talking about Richie, because they didn't signpost that as 95 initially. Right. And I kind of, then you figure out, oh no, okay. All right. But yeah, that was that. Now, Joe and Mythos and Amanda. Amanda's kind of not really in this episode much, but her arc, her stuff was done last time.
Right.
So that's fine. We didn't get, Mythos last time, which I really, it's a tribute to Peter Wingfield, how well he can play the different facets of Mythos.
Mm-hmm.
Because he can be scary.
Yeah.
He can be intimidating. And he can be very diabolical. And I liked that because we got to see all of that out of him.
Yeah, it was funny when they jumped to 95 and, you know, he's talking to his girlfriend, Jillian, and, you know, she's trying to be like, look, we can convince them. And he's like, no, we can't, you know. And I was like, that is so Mythos. Like, I don't know why I have to sit here and remind myself that he's doing a good job with it, but I'm like, dang it.
Yeah. Right down to when he says, you know, I am doing something. I'm living. I'm trying to survive.
Right.
That's such a Mythos moment. And then he gets all that taken away from him and he just goes dark.
Yep.
And then Joe, of course, we get to see a couple of versions of Joe. That was what threw me off at first when Richie goes to him and I'm like, wait, Joe looks fine here. He doesn't have the terrible wig. What's going on? And that's when I had to realize that, oh, no, this is still 1995. This isn't the, quote, present.
Horton hasn't taken over and pushed Joe out yet.
Nope. And look, Jim Burns, I mean, always a win. He gets to play these different versions of Joe, both the version that still has hope and then the one that lost hope.
Yep.
And just doesn't care anymore. I mean, to the point where, like, you know, he's sitting in that wheelchair with Mythos, and that Joe Dawson is like, this guy's just going to kill me. It doesn't matter. And who cares? He doesn't care. He doesn't care to the point where he spits in his face.
Especially during the fight scene. Like, all Joe is saying is kill him. Yeah. Kill him. Kill him. Like,
oh, yeah.
There's no love lost there at all.
Nope. None. And that's and it's such a weird thing for Joe Dawson to be yelling that to an immortal.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So yeah, it's, I mean, those three are great, and the three characters, cause even, you know, Amanda gets her moments at the end with Duncan, and they all have their moment right at the end. We're going to talk about soon. But yeah, I liked what I saw from the three of them. And we have a couple of fights in this episode, which is good. We needed that. I think the show needed some swordplay, especially in this final episode. So I want to talk first about the one with Mythos. I liked that because that was Angry Duncan.
Yep.
And we had Angry Duncan and we had Angry Duncan who knows all of Mythos's tricks.
Mm-hmm.
And it confuses Mythos that he knows his tricks. And I like that. It's a nice wrinkle to throw in there when he goes to pull the second blade out and Duncan's like, I've seen that one before.
Yeah.
And he's able to easily get the best of him. And then the last fight with O'Rourke, we get a little bit of Cocky Duncan.
Yeah, we do.
And I would say the technical aspects of that fight, it's not the best one we've seen in the series.
Right.
But I thought for narrative and to do something different, having them running up around all those rusted out cars was kind of fun.
Yeah.
I mean, we've seen better choreography, but it was fine. It did have a hell of a quickening, though.
Yeah, it did.
They saved some pyro budget for that one.
Yeah, they did.
I think
they even brought in Amazing Grace for a half second.
Yeah. I wondered what your thoughts were on that.
It was fine. It was just kind of like, it wasn't like the random, I don't know where these lyrics came from version. It was like the actual him. And it was like specifically like, okay, that's kind of, you're kind of shoehorning it in here. But, you know, there's worse things they've done with it. So.
Not as bad as some other times.
Not nearly.
And then we end the episode after that quickening, which has a very interesting ending to it where Duncan's, you know, he's done with the quickening and they all walk up to him and Amanda's, you know, hugging him and being like, you're okay. And Duncan just says like, never again, and walks away. It's a little bit cryptic.
A little bit.
But then we end the episode with a montage of the series.
Mm-hmm.
We get about 5 minutes of clips from all throughout the series, all the different characters, moments, and it's all set to Bonnie Portmore.
Of course.
And it was really cool to see, you know, you're seeing Richie, you're seeing Tessa, Amanda, Mythos, Joe. We get him running into Darius, and we see a couple, you know, several clips of Darius and Fitz and different fights that he had, different bad guys that he fought, you know, all of this. It was pretty good. I kind of liked that.
Yeah. Yeah, I definitely dug it.
Ending with intercutting some stuff where, you know, Duncan gets to talk to Mythos, to Joe, and to Amanda on the barge one last time. He gets to say something to each of them.
Mm-hmm.
Include, you know, things that he had never said to them until that point. You know, telling Mythos like he's learned a lot from him, a lot about how people can change over time, and, you know, telling Joe that like his life is better with him in it, and Joe being like, yeah, no, I don't want a life that you're not in.
Mm-hmm.
And telling Amanda that he loves her.
Yeah. Dropping the L-bomb.
And then that's it. We get some that intercut with silhouette of Duncan, popped collar, walking off into the distance and fade to black.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is a pretty good ending episode for the series in that it, in true immortal fashion, it doesn't end.
Yeah.
It's final without there being a finale, I think would be the way to put it. And I kind of am glad that they didn't have some sort of like big stakes, big bad that he had to overcome, and that's what they ended the series on. It was sort of the series had to end very internally for Duncan.
Yeah.
So
I think my main critique is just I wish we would have gotten a little bit more of that internalization of what it all meant. What, when he walks off and says never again, what does that mean? When he's talking to Joe and Mythos, Amanda, so what does that mean? You know.
So, yeah. I mean, what I like about it is it does leave it a little bit open to interpretation.
Sure.
And I think what this has hammered home for me more than anything was it's reinforced a lot of the things that I disliked about Highlander the Source. Because regardless of everything that happened in the series and all of the negatives that he felt like his life had been leading up to this moment, and him getting this It's a Wonderful Life scenario where he gets to see the world without him in it, the show ended on a positive note of Duncan realizing that one person can make a difference in a lot of lives. And it reinforced his, because Duncan is a beacon of hope.
Right.
And he always has been. From the beginning of the series, he's sort of been that. He's very virtuous and he's very hopeful. He's hopeful for other people. He's hopeful for mankind. He's hopeful for young immortals to be better. And for relationships between immortals and mortals to be good. And all of this kind of stuff. It's always been hope for him. And so to end the series, I feel like on a... The never again is cryptic, but I kind of read that as like him saying like, I'll never, never again. I'm not going to doubt myself again. I'm not going to go down that dark path again.
That's probably it.
And so then for it in the canon, or if you want to call it canon anymore, it depends on who you talk to, if the source is or not, for that movie to then have, you know, however many years, like 15 years later, whatever it's supposed to be, 20 years later, he suddenly lost all hope again.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't get a reason why, other than he had a girlfriend who left him. Like that, right. That really bugged me. And that's that whole thing I've come back to, where it was a Highlander movie written by somebody who didn't like Highlander because they didn't get the character. Like Duncan, that's not Duncan MacLeod.
Mm-hmm.
And especially given the way the series ends, and especially given the way Endgame treated Duncan. Because he's still, like, even there, he's the hope, he's the beacon of hope, and he brings Connor back and gives Connor hope again. And it's Duncan's hope that lets Connor let go. Because I think without that, Connor doesn't have the trust in Duncan being able to defeat Kel.
Right. That's true.
So I think that's a big part of it. And to take that away from him in the source is terrible, which is why this is a better send-off for the character.
Yeah.
You know, because there's only one way that Duncan can be, and that is hopeful and that is positive, regardless of what happens. Even when he doubts himself, he eventually will come around and find the sliver of sunlight.
So. Yeah.
That's kind of how
if anything, the only thing I wish they put on there is maybe a little button of either Duncan or Joe, kind of some kind of thing of Duncan went off and did something or was this way. And
yeah.
Something like that. I don't know.
Again, I don't hate the open-ended nature of it because I like ambiguous endings in a lot of ways.
Sure.
And it sort of gives us that, like, again, immortals live forever, so it's just sort of Duncan walks off and he's doing his thing now, and his adventures continue. We're not seeing them. It left the door open too, if they ever were able to restart the series, which sadly they never did.
Yeah.
There were some, I think, audiobooks. I think Big Finish did some audio, maybe, of stuff. I don't know if that was only around Mythos or if Duncan was part of that as well. But, you know, for all its faults, Endgame was at least a better Highlander story than The Quickening and The Source.
Yes, for sure.
And it at least got the character... I feel like Endgame got the characters of Connor and Duncan right. Because Connor...
it did.
Connor always kind of was the dour one.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he was always a little bit down. He really... Connor really viewed immortality as a burden.
Yep.
And the movies sort of reinforced that, where he was always losing someone and having to come to grips with that, whereas Duncan was sort of the opposite. He was the other side of that coin, where his immortality wasn't the burden that it was to Connor, but he felt like he had to endure it anyway and deal with those things by remembering them positively. And so, you know, to have the series end the way that it does, with him realizing the positive effect that he's had, and then the little clip show, followed by, again, I just feel like Endgame got that character right.
Right.
So, that's Highlander the series.
Yeah, it is.
And, whew, boy, it has been quite the ride.
Yeah, it has.
And if you've been here with us for all of it, thank you so much. It's been
for sure
quite wonderful. Now, we are coming back next week. We are going to recap this season, and we're going to recap the series. We're going to give you some highs and lows, season 16 specifically, but also some of our favorite moments from the series as a whole. Yeah, we might poke some fun at a few things too, because you know, it's what we do. And then and I want to give out some awards for the series in total. I want to talk, because we definitely want to talk about, you know, the big things on this show were special guests and the musical connections, as well as you know, those flashbacks and the look of things. So we're going to talk about a lot of that next week, as our, for our season 6 and Highlander the series recap. And after that, we're still not done. Oh no.
No.
There's another Highlander movie we haven't covered yet.
Yup.
There is an animated Highlander movie called Highlander, The Search for Vengeance. And we are going to watch that as well.
Gonna pull a Tom Merritt for anybody who hasn't seen it.
On the live stream, you can see Audie holding up the DVD of it right now. We've got DVD copies, and we are going to watch that. And so that is going to be after our recap of the season. So next week, we're recapping season 6, and we'll give you some of our favorites of the series as a whole of Highlander, and then we will be watching the 6th Highlander movie, Highlander The Search for Vengeance.
Yep.
So definitely you're going to want to come back for that. We do record this show live Tuesday nights, 9 p.m. Eastern time at twitch.tv/TVsTravis. You can check out the show. It is it hits podcast feeds on Thursdays, anywhere you get your podcasts. You can go straight to anchor.fm/Let's Watch Highlander or all of your favorite podcatchers. Just search for Let's Watch Highlander and look for the awesome imagery that Audie makes every week. It's quite fantastic.
Thank you, good sir.
As always, if you want to talk about Highlander or, you know, anything else, really, you can find me on Twitter at TV's Travis. I do occasionally post pictures of my dog on Instagram, also as TV's Travis. But I'm most active, I would say, on Twitter or at TV'sTravis.com. And you can find stuff there. And Audie, you are on Twitter as well.
Yep. The Audie Norman at Twitter, the Audie Norman on Instagram.
Excellent. And the two of us are one half of the foursome that does Those Were the Days. As well, you can find that anywhere you get your podcasts, where we talk classic television. We just wrapped up a month of game shows, and that was a lot of fun.
That was fun.
We're definitely going back to that. And I'm looking forward to our upcoming stuff. There's gonna be some interesting conversations to have.
It's gonna be an interesting one to do for sure.
So that as well, but definitely check out Audie's artwork, because it's fantastic. Other shows that we are a part of, you can find Those Were the Days. You can find Let's Watch Highlander at tvstravis.com as well. So if you can't search for them, you can go there and find them and then grab it in your favorite podcatcher. But until next week, until our recap of the season, of the series, for Audie, I'm Travis, letting you know that there can be only one Duncan MacLeod of the Clan MacLeod.
Amazing Grace.
I am Duncan MacLeod of the Clan MacLeod.
Never heard of you.